welcome to Motopod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 478 for Wednesday, the 2nd of December, 2015. My name is Jim Race. Some of you may remember me. and I'm chatting with Harry Lloyd across the pond in, I'm assuming, Barcelona, right?
Yep, we're still in Barcelona for the 2nd. Only a couple more weeks left here before we go back to Australia for the winter break. So yeah, it'll be some interesting time zones for the next couple of Motopod shows, but I think in the coming weeks we might start to sort of slow the pace down and maybe only do a show every 2 weeks, because as you'll see from this show, the pace of the motorcycling world is starting to wind down a little as everyone goes on a much needed break.
Well, yeah, and we are into the winter break at this point.
Yep, testing ban officially on.
Yep. And quite often that turns into a Motopod ban as well.
Yeah, we'll try and keep it trickling out. There are one or two ideas we have kicking around for some stuff to keep everyone entertained. But yeah, next week we'll probably take the week off, and then we'll probably come back the week after to talk about the Super Prestigio. Obviously, Jim, we had you at the American Super Prestigio the other week, and everyone really seemed to enjoy those chats, especially the Anthony West chat. Anthony West, certainly not one to shy away.
Boy, did he throw QMF under the bus. I was like, oh boy.
Yeah, and you know, unfortunately, I think things like that for riders in Anthony West's situation of they haven't maybe had the best results in their careers and having to pay for a ride or ride for free, I think those things are unfortunately quite common. So it's not all Valentino Rossi and Marc Marquez, you know, saying words to each other in a press conference. There are some people out there who, you know, even racing are legitimately having a pretty tough time. So important to see how the other half live.
That was one of those interviews that you're doing. You're like, oh my God, is he actually saying this?
Yeah, but it was all good. And as I said, people seem to enjoy it. Jim, yep. You've actually got a couple more interviews for us. One from the Super Prestigio, which unfortunately fell down the back of the Motopod Dropbox couch and slipped through the net. So
we've got both Josh Hayes and Taylor Knapp, who were teammates at Super Prestigio. And then I had a chance to, just off the cuff last night, I called Matt Mladen because I was curious of his take on what's going on in racing. And you guys will get to hear all three of those. So definitely some good stuff and something to keep you warm on a long winter night.
Yep, certainly. So yeah, we do have those. And then we'll trudge straight along into the news. There's not too much news, and unfortunately none of the news is super surprising. We had Luca Marini announced at Forward Racing, which should come as no real surprise to anyone. He was on the provisional entry list. Unfortunately, with the provisional entry lists out, there's no more real surprises with riders for next year. So Luca Marini confirmed at Forward Racing alongside Lorenzo Baldassarre. It'll be interesting to see how he goes. As I've said on a couple of shows, Marini showed really well in the CEV. You know, he's not just Valentino Rossi's half-brother. He's a really strong rider in his own right. And I think he deserves that ride. You know, maybe another year in the CEV could have done him well, but I certainly think that he'll have some aggressive rides and could maybe give Baldassarre a run for his money next year.
Indeed. We did have testing going on, and
yes,
that was super cool.
Yes, we did. We had a fair bit of testing. We had all of the Ducati bikes out in Jerez, along with the two Aprilias and the Repsol Honda riders. And they were there along with several superbike teams. Now, most of the superbike teams, apart from the Yamaha team, ran with transponders, as Scott and I sort of briefly talked about last show. A big thank you to Scott for coming on the show, and hopefully we'll have him on a couple more times next year as well. But yeah, most of the superbike guys ran official times, and then the MotoGP guys, they all had unofficial times, you know, guy hanging over the old pit wall with the stopwatch. So especially with the MotoGP times, very much a big grain of salt with these times. But allegedly the fastest rider of the test was Scott Redding with a 138.96, 0.2 of a second ahead of Marc Marquez with a 139.17. Then Daniele Petrucci was third fastest with a 139.2. But then what's really interesting is that fourth fastest on combined times was Tom Sykes on the Kawasaki Superbike with a 139.3. Now, it's really important to remember that the Superbike guys, that Sykes set his lap on a qualifying tyre. And also, in the case of the GP guys, they're still learning their bikes. For the Superbike guys, they're very much in the refinement stage. It's only the Yamaha guys who have a completely new bike. Obviously, it's a slightly different version of the ZX-10R, but it's more or less the same. So a really impressive time from Sykes. And then Jonathan Rea set a 139.5 dead, which set him fifth fastest overall, faster than Andrea Iannone on the factory GP15.
It's very uncommon that we end up having both GP bikes and World Superbikes on the same track at the same time. But as you put so well, we have to take this with a grain of salt because the GP guys are getting used to the Michelins. They're getting used to the new electronics. Like you say, World Superbike basically are just, they're clicking that knob one click.
Yeah.
The guys over in GP, they're going 10 clicks. It's like, where the hell do you find, your power?
Yeah. It seems like Honda especially are having to do a lot of clicking. Honda obviously trying to fix their engine. In 2015, the engine was way too aggressive. And so for 2016, they're trying to make a better engine.
But when you say way too aggressive, it's actually where it was too aggressive. So in 2015, it was way too aggressive on top end. Now they're saying it's way too aggressive on the bottom end, which may, in the end up working well with the Michelin rear, unless they start pushing the front, which they say doesn't work well.
Yeah, maybe. And the other issue with Honda is that they're trying to fix the engine, but they're also trying to learn these new electronics. So Pedrosa, who was the seventh fastest GP rider, he was saying that, we can't tell if it's the engine that's too aggressive or if it's the electronics that aren't working correctly to smooth the engine. And then Marquez also had a fair few crashes. He had quite a nasty high side at, I believe it was turn two at Jerez, because the traction control didn't cut in like he thought it would. So there's definitely still a few teething problems. As you can see from the times, Scott Redding fastest, Daniele Petrucci third fastest. It seems like Ducati have sort of got the best handle of the situation. Ducati have a couple of advantages with A, they had Michele Pirro doing thousands and thousands of laps. That might be a slight exaggeration, but I'm quoting Cal Crutchlow, so you can send angry tweets to him. but don't say I sent you, because then he'll come and murder me. Michele Pirro, he was doing a lot of laps on the Michelin tyres. Then Ducati also worked very closely with their open teams that were more or less running the same software that all of the guys, all the riders and teams will be using next year. Ducati was the only, air quotes, factory effort in the open class. Yamaha chucked a couple of bikes at Ford Racing and said, there, go nuts. Honda made this, production bike that wasn't quite up to snuff and said, there, go nuts. And, neither Yamaha or Honda really, I think, took advantage of it. Certainly one of Ducati's strongest points in the last three or so years since Gigi Dallinia has joined them is that Ducati are really able to take advantage of a lot of rules. Be it fair or not, Ducati find, maybe not the loopholes, but they find the way to make the rules work best for them so that they can, catch up. And Ducati now are back on level playing field with both Honda and Yamaha. And based on these testing times, obviously it's still very early and, there's a lot to come, et cetera, et cetera. It's only testing. It seems like Ducati are going to be strong next year.
I think we'd have to pull way, way back, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think Honda has ever run, at least for the factory squad, any other software than what, software and hardware, electronically, than what they created in-house. And now they are on the same platform as everybody else.
Yeah, that's true for Yamaha. In the 2015 season, this year / last year, depending on how you look at it, everyone was on the same spec hardware for electronics. They all had the same Magneti Marelli dash, but certainly this is the first time that Honda in the GP class have really had to try and, use someone else's product. Speaking of Honda, it was a very strong showing from Nicky Hayden on the Superbike, setting a 140.193, the fourth fastest Superbike time, which was ahead of Chaz Davies and Davide Giuliano. And, you know, considering the state of that Honda and that it is only Hayden's, what, second time testing that CBR 1000 in Superbike trim, I think that's a really solid achievement from Hayden, you know. Will he win a championship on that Honda? Probably not. But could he get podiums? Maybe.
Yeah. Maybe not on that Honda, but the rumor mill is strong, and Honda has said they're going to come out with a new bike for next year.
Yes, and the ever-present rumor mill.
Yeah, I know. They're going to throw a V5 onto the street, right?
Yeah.
It sounds like he gelled instantly with the Tenkata folks. So I look forward to good stuff out of him this coming year. He sounds cheery about it.
Yeah, he does. He certainly does seem a bit more excited about racing than he did on the Open Honda. Another big surprise was Xavi Forres on the Ducati. He's on a satellite Ducati. I believe it's with Barney Racing, if memory serves. He was third fastest overall of the Superbike guys. And then PJ Jacobson, he allegedly set a 142.292 on a Supersport bike, i.e. his CBR 600. But PJ Jacobson also got to run on Michael Vandermark's Honda. Vandermark, as we said last show, had to sit out much of the test for arm pump. And I remember reading somewhere that PJ had set his time of 142, which was a second slower than Leon Kamya, which on a Supersport bike would be really impressive. And even for not his first time on a Superbike, but his first time on that Honda Superbike would be a decent time. But yeah, I remember reading somewhere that 142 actually came from the Superbike and not from the Supersport bike, as some people were reporting. But I couldn't find where I'd read that, so.
I'm going to have to pester him, because I am curious, A. And B, the whole sponsorship situation over there is still up in the air.
Yeah, I was just about to get to that. So I can't remember if we have mentioned it, but unfortunately, Core, I think they're Motorsport, but anyway, the Core brand have pulled out of sponsoring PJ Jacobson and the Tenkate team. So PJ is currently without a title sponsor for the season. Right now, it looks as though things will still be able to progress ahead, but it'll definitely be one to watch with PJ if money does become an issue. And it'd be a real shame for PJ to have to, you know, the start of his season in 2015 wasn't great because he was with that Kawasaki team that weren't quite fully legit, and it'd be a real shame that now that he has gotten a chance on a really competitive bike, it would be a shame for that to again collapse because of money. Because I think that, you know, certainly towards the second half of the season, when PJ did originally get on that Honda, he was able to challenge Sofoglu, and I think that both PJ Jacobson and Jules Cluzel could really give Keenan Sofoglu a run for his money in 2016 and maybe make that championship a bit more exciting in the Supersport class.
Yeah, there are a lot of people that, at least over here in the States, that were, when PJ got the run on Michael's bike, were going, ooh, an all-American team for 2017. That would be kind of cool.
Yeah, it would. It'd be interesting to see if they would do something like that. I'm not sure how heavily involved American Honda is. I think they've chucked a fair bit of money behind Hayden to help him with this Superbike ride, but I'm not 100% sure. But yeah, I mean, times, you know, it still looks like the Kawasaki's are the bikes to beat in World Superbike. As we mentioned last show, the two Crescent Yamahas didn't run transponders, so it's really hard to see what they're capable of. But certainly that Yamaha R1M has shown incredibly well in all domestic series it's entered. So you have to think that they'll be able to put in a good race or two. On the subject of World Superbikes, it was announced, I believe it was today, maybe it was yesterday, that both Josh Brooks and Carol Abraham would be moving to World Superbike with the Milwaukee BMW team. Milwaukee, run by Sean Muir Racing, they obviously took Josh Brooks to the British Superbike title this year on Yamaha. They tried to secure a deal with Yamaha, but it didn't quite work out. So now they are moving to World Superbikes as they wanted to, but with BMW as a customer team.
Okay.
So, I hope it goes well. I think Brooks, I think will hopefully go well. You know, a fair few of the tracks, he hasn't raced in Superbikes for a fair few years. I'm trying to think the last time he raced in Superbikes full time. It was quite a while ago, maybe 2009, something like that. 2012, maybe.
Yeah. It's been a while.
Yeah, around that time. Obviously, Abraham never raced in Superbike, but I think a lot of people underestimate Carol Abraham. You know, he had a pretty crap time in MotoGP, but in Moto2 he wasn't too bad. He got a podium and he won a race, you know. Sure. So yeah. I think there is some talent there with Carol Abraham, and hopefully he is over his quite serious foot injury, because that was a pretty nasty one for him. But yeah, I know I'm looking forward to Superbikes next year. It'll be interesting to see what Jonathan Rea can do. If you go to the MotoPod Facebook fan page, you can see quite a good little video that Kawasaki produced about Jonathan Rea, and it is chapter one of a multi-part series. So I'd implore everyone to not only head over to Facebook and like the MotoPod fan page, but also to watch that video, because it is quite interesting. It's about 10 minutes long, and it's pretty cool.
Cool.
MotoGP also looking good. You know, obviously, as we said, the Ducati's looking quite strong initially. Redding especially looking strong. It seems like Redding's enjoying himself a fair bit more. There's also been a plethora of BSB announcements coming out of the NEC, the big British bike show, and we'll probably do a summary of them a bit in a couple of weeks, maybe. You know, lots of announcements there. So if you go to the official BSB Twitter page, they have all of those announcements there. Not too many surprises on the old BSB front. One or two rumours about some riders maybe returning to BSB, which could be quite interesting. But with Brooks gone, as we said, and it seems like Ducati Factory are giving a lot of support to Shaky Byrne. It seems like Byrne could once again be the rider to beat in BSB as he goes for yet another title. Riichi Kiyonari signed for Suzuki, so hopefully it's one of Kiyo's good years. Kiyo goes quite well on the Kagayama Suzuki at the Suzuka 8-hour, so hopefully Kiyo can do well. I mean, you know, Kiyo, the most inconsistent rider. But yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it for news. As we said, there wasn't too much coming out, especially on the world stage. Super Prestigio coming up. It starts the 12th of December is the race day in Barcelona. Right after this, we will have that Josh Hayes and Taylor Knapp interview that Jim managed to get us from the American Super Prestigio. Quickly, the most important part of the show that I almost forgot, a big thank you to the donators. Of course, Andrew Corse for his very generous recurring donation. Also to Chris Whirling and Everett Hager for their also hugely generous donations. If you'd like to help MotoPod keep trucking along, motopodcast.com is the website, I think. Yeah, motopodcast.com is the website. And on the left-hand side of the page, there is a PayPal link. And all of your donations, be they big or small, really, really do help. You know, they help pay for things like hosting and getting us out to one or two events, like Jim going out to Las Vegas. I will be at the Super Prestigio, so if you're there, please do come say hello if you see me. I'm not quite sure in what capacity I will be working, but yeah, hopefully I can get at least one or two photos to share on the aforementioned Facebook fan page. But with all those digressions out of the way, it is now time to kick into those interviews for about, I think, the sixth time. Josh Hayes, Taylor Knapp, and Matt Maladen, and we'll catch everyone later. Bye-bye.
Jim Race here for MotoPod with Josh Hayes, and taking his boots off in the background is Taylor Knapp. Here at Super Prestigio, we just went through the LCQ, and you did not LCQ.
No, not this time. I had some pretty good heat races in the semi. I had my first really good gate pick, and Raj just got a little sideways, and I got hung up on him and unfortunately fell over, and so that put me in the LCQ.
You pretty much, I'm guessing, about 30 foot out of the gate, you were on your head.
I got to ride his rear fender for a little while, you know. And I had to be the only guy that got taken out on the gate start. Super Prestigio. I got that deal. I didn't even make it to turn one, so excited about that, and I get that stat. And then, you know, LCQ, you're starting from a tough spot on the outside. I got a decent start, but, you know, the couple guys that got clean out front, you know, you start battling. I work my way through. Tony and Joe was just up there a little ways, and, you know, 10-second laps in a 6-lap race, you don't have or 8-lap race, you don't really have a lot of time to do much. So, honestly, I thought the LCQ, considering how I feel after three pretty good get-offs in dirt track in the last week, I thought the last race, actually, riding-wise, I was probably happiest with some of that, some of the things that happened in that LCQ, even though the result wasn't that good.
Yeah, you and I talked the other day, actually, I think Thursday on practice, and you said you'd much rather have a 250 out here.
Well, it's kind of an experience thing. You know, Yamaha did awesome. They built this awesome dirt track bike. And
Taylor stole your personal bike.
Yeah, you know, like... it just worked out good. You know, Keith wanted to see this bike go around the racetrack, and he offered it to me. And how do you say no when they offer you a factory machine, you know? So
yeah.
I got the opportunity to see what I can do. And unfortunately, the bike's just a little better than I am, you know, and I'm still coming up to speed at my skill level at dirt track. And so it was a bit of a handful, but I gave it the best go I could. And actually, you know, I felt like I did some things well, but I definitely have some work to do. And fortunately, I have a bike that I get to take away from Taylor now, so I can go home and work on it a little bit and see if I can
You get to improve take that bike. Home?
Yeah, well, I'm not that one, mine. Okay. The bike that Taylor rode is my personal bike, so I get to go work on it again, you know?
All right, so tell me about the factory Yamaha bike. What's it got beyond what you have on your personal bike?
Well, I don't know. Most of it's all on the inside. So, you know, it's just a nice machine, you know? Bryce, how do you say your name correctly?
Bryce
Eichelberg?
Eichelberger.
Berger. Bryce Eichelberger built this beautiful machine back at the shop. And then, you know, having him and Mitch, having two crew guys out here is pretty awesome. Race Tech and Jimmy Wood did the suspension on it, which is identical to my personal bike.
Okay.
And so that was a big help. And then it was just a matter of, you know, what's on the inside, which I don't know. But I can tell you it's got some bark, and it's a really good machine. I say a little bit, it's a bit harder to ride than mine, but I got to be honest, I don't know that it is. I haven't really back-to-back them too much.
Yeah.
And it definitely taught me a little bit about dirt track, and I'm excited to get to work.
Did you guys switch bikes at all while you're here?
No. When we started out at Paris, Taylor actually started out riding Keith's bike because I was a little late getting out there for that test.
Okay.
And I did a couple laps on my bike, and then we ended up swapping bikes, and since we knew we were going to race these particular bikes, we just kind of stuck to that for the rest of the time. So,
what did you guys? I'll get to you in a moment. What did you guys think of the track?
I think the track was fun. It was, you know, I don't think dirt track's supposed to be easy, and it's probably not supposed to be perfect, consistent all the time. In a perfect world, it's like that, but. You know, even road race tracks aren't perfect. So
right.
At least they're consistent. You know, the grip doesn't change to any for us whenever we're out there. So for me, we're a little behind the eight ball just in experience and learning how to deal with a changing racetrack. And compared to Thursday, it was a bit different in the practice sessions. It was really hard to deal with. It got better as the night went on, but it was still pretty soft and a lot of ruts and things. And, you know, how I felt like I should deal with it. And then you watch the pro guys and how they deal with it. And it's trying to reconcile those two. And there's just not enough time and not enough laps to figure out how to do it. I can't do monkey see, monkey do well enough with those guys, you know, to just go out there and do what they do. I'm going to have to go home and work at it really hard for a long time.
Which is
fun at 40 years old.
Indeed. Your track at home is about the same size, right?
Oh, no. My track at home is maybe two-thirds the size of this track. I have a 95-foot track that I can work with. And for the most part, it was built for mini bikes, and I don't have room to build it any bigger. So
okay.
I just have to wait until some of the local races happen out at Paris and Del Mar and things like that I can go out and do some local racing at home.
When you grow up, do you want to be a dirt track racer?
I don't know. You know, after seeing what Joe Kopp did the other night, he gave me inspiration that I still have a couple years left in me. But, right now this is, honestly, it's supposed to be fun.
Yep.
And it's an incredible training tool. I don't know if it's necessarily lessons learned here directly correlate to road racing, but it's time on a motorcycle, learning new skills, balance, control, all those kinds of things.
Yep.
And you can't beat that.
And you're coming out of it, and you're not broken up. You're not getting carted off in the blinky light.
Yeah, all my arms and legs work. So I definitely would have preferred to have done better. I mean, we're all high-end competitors, everybody in this field on the all-star side and on the flat track side. And so none of us take defeat very well, and I probably won't sleep tonight very well because I'll be thinking about all the things I wish I had done better. and that'll motivate me to go out and work on those things.
All right. Well, I'll buy you a beer later.
Sounds good. Thanks, buddy.
All right. Cheers. Taylor. Jim Race here for Moto 5 with Taylor Knapp.
Sorry, you're not second best, my friend. You just happened to was waiting to get the boots on. Your experience on Josh's secondhand bike.
Yeah, first I got to thank Josh for letting me ride his bike. Josh and Keith for helping me line it up. And all in all, it was pretty awesome. You know, I think they did a great job with the event. The track was awesome. I don't think it could have been any better. I know it was a little rocky and, you know, wasn't the best early on, but tonight they did a great job with it. And I never even rode this bike until a couple days ago, so not a ton of flat track experience. I did do some when I was really young, and then I also ride on the ice quite a bit with Brian and Jared and those guys in Michigan, so it's the closest thing I have to doing something like this. But
I don't think that road racers have any problem taking the step over to flat track because it is so similar.
Yeah, I felt pretty comfortable, actually. I took to it pretty quick, I feel like, and I had some slow qualifying times I wasn't happy with, but when it come time to race, I felt right in my element. And basically what happened tonight was just short track racing.
Yeah.
You know, you look at Brian Smith is one of the best in the world, and he's in the same position last night that I'm in now. And, you know, that's the only thing that I'm going to, you know, like Josh said, it's eating me up, but that's the only thing that's helping me right now is just knowing that anything could have happened. I probably could have won it just as easy as I didn't make the main. So,
yeah.
It was fun. I had a really good time, so it was awesome.
A bit seriously good fun. I'm assuming since we're here in Vegas that you, much like everybody, is going to pack the refreshing beverages dispenser probably later this evening.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. I'm feeling a little too bummed, so, you know, I might just hang out.
You did fine. You did fine, man. All right. Well, best of luck next year in Moto America, and I look forward to seeing what you do as well as Josh. Do you know what your setup is for next year?
Not entirely, so still working out some details, and hopefully I'll know something soon.
Okay, cool.
All right.
Cool.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Do you have a moment to talk about racing?
Yeah, I don't remember much about it. It's been that long, but yep.
All right, so I want to ask you some very abstract questions. Have you had a chance to watch Moto America this year?
No.
Nothing? You don't get it down
nah.
there?
Nah. No, I've seen some results. That's about it, really.
Okay. All right, then we'll toss that out in the bin. What do you think about went down in MotoGP this year?
To do with what?
Well, with Lorenzo, Rossi, and Marquez.
Oh, that whole thing. Oh, listen, you know, Rossi ran him wide, and bottom line is Marquez crashed because he decided to turn back into Rossi. So Rossi didn't force the crash. Rossi definitely deliberately forced him wide, but Rossi wasn't the one who forced the crash. Marquez forced the crash on himself.
Would you have done the same thing in the same circumstance?
Oh, I don't know. Oh, listen, I don't know. I don't know. Honestly, I really don't know. But, Marquez does his thing, and Marquez doesn't mind driving people off the wrong way, and also doesn't mind running into people and crashing himself. So, you know, bit of his own medicine back again, maybe, you know.
Are you into the mode where you just don't give a fuck about racing anymore?
I enjoyed watching MotoGP. I thought it was a good year. I think the right rider won the world championship. I think Lorenzo was definitely the bloke for the year to win. He definitely was the fastest throughout the year on a consistent basis. obviously from a consistency standpoint was a bit better. But, you know, the right guy won the world championship. But what happened between Rossi and Marquez was, I don't know, it's a bit of a wank, really. So bottom line is Marquez, you know, he's run into a few people, including Rossi, and he's crashed himself doing some stupid things. And, you know, in the end, when someone rides like that, sometimes other people might get a bit fed up with it and, you know, retaliate sometimes or whatever else. But the bottom line is that thing that happened in Malaysia, Marquez, of course, made himself crash. He didn't have to turn back into Rossi, and that's what happened. So.
Yeah, it created an amazing amount of histrionics online.
All the armchair experts, I'm sure they had plenty to say about it. Yeah.
and they always know best.
Of course they do.
What are you up to these days?
I've been a dad and been back on the motocross bike and doing a few motocross races and bits and pieces. And, yeah, actually got a couple of broken ribs at the moment and a bit of a concussion. I had a big crash on the motocross bike a couple of days ago, so...
Are you going to participate in the Troy Bayliss Classic?
No.
Why not?
Oh, I don't know. I haven't really thought about it, to be honest with you. I just enjoy motocross, you know. I'm not really much of a dirt tracker, to be honest with you. So as much as I wouldn't mind doing a bit of dirt track and all the rest of it, I enjoy going out and doing a bit of motocross. I enjoy the jumps, you know. I've got to have jumps on the racetrack to have fun, so...
So, not a week ago, I was out in Las Vegas for Super Prestigio of the Americas, and I'm not sure if you caught that, and I'm sure it probably wasn't broadcast down under, but they're going to be having that in Barcelona in not 2 months' time, and you would be a perfect...
Oh, that's the market as well, yeah.
Yeah, you would be a perfect...
Yes, and Rossi won't be getting an invite.
From what I hear, he is going to be getting an invite.
Ah, good. Perfect. That's good.
Yeah.
Good time for redemption.
Yeah, I know. Can you imagine the two of them banging bars?
Funny, yes.
Yeah. All right. So how have you been otherwise? Everything going well?
Yeah, everything's good. Yeah. All right. Cruising along.
All right. Do you think about racing much anymore, or are you just into kind of a chill zone?
Yeah, no, I really don't. I mean, I enjoy watching the GP. This year was good. I mean, you know, seeing those top few blokes there doing their thing is pretty good to watch, to be honest with you. It was good to see Josh Brooks win the British Championship this year, the Aussie rider. He's been over there trying for a long time. He's been over there trying for a long time, and it's good to see Josh win the British this year. That was really good.
And he's got a great ride for next year.
Yeah, I guess he's World Superbike next year with the same team. What bikes are they on, you know?
I think they're probably going to be on Suzuki, which means they're not going to have an updated chassis and whatnot, but...
Yeah, they don't get the new bike until later in the mid-year anyway. But it's good to see him win that. So, yeah, I take a little bit of interest in what some of the Aussies are doing, and, you know, also sort of got more interest back in the motocross side of things now, and enjoy watching the AMA motocross and also the World Championship motocross, and, yeah.
All right, have you considered sponsoring any young riders down under?
Not at the moment. Not at the moment. Too busy being selfish and enjoying my life at the moment.
you know what? I kind of like that. I appreciate that attitude. Yep. All right, mate. It's been a long time since we touched base, and I just thought I'd give you a call out of the blue. So I appreciate you taking the time, and we will we will talk to you later.
Yeah, anytime, mate. All right. Thanks, mate. Bye-bye.
Cheers. Okay, bye, everybody. Love you.
Okay, I'll see you later then.
All right, ciao, man.
Bye.